This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the results, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This is the Besotted Pride of West London podcast, and we're coming to you after the international break. We've had a bit of a rest, a bit of a marathon run there before that one. So it's only a month, but it felt like forever. But now we're back, getting potty for it. Got a game at the weekend against Arsenal, 5:30 kickoff on BT Sport, as it used to be called, TNT, which sort of sounds like something out of some sort of kind of cartoon show, actually. You know what I'm saying? So, not quite sure what's going on there. But anyway, we've got a match on TNT. Like I said, the Arsenal game is in the house on Saturday, New Griffin Park. Everyone's going to be getting up nice and early for that. But we're going to talk about that a little bit later. But my name is Billy Grant. I'm sitting here back in the virtual joint after a couple of weeks off. We were going to do a podcast last week, but we decided against it because we needed a bit of a rest. And there's lots and lots going on in both of our lives. So we kind of left it. So I'm sitting here in the virtual joint with my man, Laney. How are you?
Yeah, I'm really good, thank you, mate. Yeah, as you said, good to have a couple of weeks off. Raring to go for Arsenal. Good to come back after the international break with a cracker like that. Should be a really, really good game under the lights at New Griffin Park. So, yeah, bit potty for that one, mate.
That's right. It's not Uncle Cracker by any chance, is it?
No, it's not, no.
Okay, I was just checking just to make sure. I think we did an Uncle Cracker joke actually probably about 6 or 7 years ago when we used to do the old school podcasts in the pub. But I had to reel it out again. You're probably thinking, what the hell is he talking about, Uncle Cracker? But you remember, follow you, follow me, or whatever it was. I can't remember. Anyway, we shall move on. So anyway, listen, we've got loads to talk about on this podcast. Obviously, we had the Liverpool game, so we're going to be talking about that. We're harking back to the Liverpool game, also listening to what the fans had to say, both Brentford and Liverpool fans. It's quite an interesting Liverpool fan in there as well. We had to leave him in the clip, actually. Terry the Switcher, you know what I'm saying? As far as Dave called him. What did you call him?
I don't know, but I had to physically push him away at the end. It was a bit odd.
Yeah, by Scouser, I think you called him, like, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Which is, yeah, because he says one thing 1 minute and then another thing another. But anyway, so we've got that as well. We've also got JB in the house, actually, talking about losses and Liverpool and 1889 and all sorts as well. We've got Bees Breakdown. We've got the Gowler. The Bees Breakdown, too, giving a statistical and tactical lowdown on the Liverpool game and the Arsenal game as well. And also, we've got a special guest. I had a little chat to Turkish from AFTV, Arsenal Fan TV, as well. And he's having a good old chinwag about Arsenal. So we've got all this on the show later. So definitely loads to check out. But like I said to you, International Week. This is a bit of a sort of kind of like, I actually like this week after International Week, because this is the week where you have the, not the trepidation, but you're looking in anticipation, right, for what's going to be to come the following summer. International Week's over. England have qualified, and all the other teams as well have qualified as well, or not qualified as the case may be. And you're just waiting for the draw. The 2nd of December is the draw for the Euros, where we know exactly where we're going to be playing and who we're going to be playing in Germany. And for me, it's a very, very exciting time. And I know for a lot of Brentford fans out there as well, some other Brentford fans may not be that excited about it, and others might be Ireland fans or Welsh fans or Scottish fans, or may just have no interest whatsoever. But I'm very excited. And like I said to you, International Week, England had two games. They'd already qualified pretty pretty much by then. They'd qualified already. So it's kind of one of those ones where they had to sort of turn up and players had to make sure they didn't get injured. And then they just sort of kind of went back home and they got the cap and they do that. But, you know, to be fair, it was all good. But International Week, like I said to you, Lainey, you're glad it's all over in a way, aren't you?
Kind of. I mean, I'm speaking just personally here. I've watching England in qualifying groups has become so monotonous and boring and underwhelming and just not as exciting as it could be and should be. We're not going to go into this too much, but it seems to be we're wasting the most exciting generation of England players that I can remember by playing sideways, dull football. But obviously getting through to the tournaments is exciting. I always look forward to those, and you know the way they end is normally an anticlimax. But we are improving, and there's reason for us to be hopeful. But the byproduct of England's predictable qualification is I can actually just switch off completely from football for a couple of weeks and just take a deep intake of breath where I watch neither of the games, which is really unlike me. You know, I used to go to them with you, then I used to watch them, and then I used to dip in occasionally, and now you couldn't pay me at the moment. So it's I'm glad that the domestic, you know, the Brentford campaign's back, because you know that's way more exciting than watching England.
That's right. And listen, at the end of the day, everyone has their opinions and their views. At the end of the day, qualification for England, and this is not an England podcast, but we just got to mention it as well, because, you know, it does feed into Brentford to a certain extent, because, you know, even though I was there in the pub and we were talking about the fact that Rico Henry, I mean, they talk about the fake Rico, you know, actually played at left back for England. And even my mates in the pub were going, God, that Rico Henry, I mean, if he can get in the game, and they're not slagging him, they're just saying, you know, there's no reason why, you know, Rico Henry couldn't have been there, and he would have definitely been there. So there's little pangs of sort of like, you know, not unhappiness, like, you know, that, you know, some of our players. Also, Ivan Toney is a shoo-in. He's an absolute shoo-in for those two matches, an absolute shoo-in for kind of going into the Euros and everything like that next year. So this, for me, is looking at what the stepping stones are going to be for next year. And for me, the one thing that I said, and I said it on AFTV interview, which you'll be able to check out, is probably out now by the time you listen to this as well. I said, you know, listen, Ivan Toney, I really do hope and I believe that he's going to stay with us between now and the summer, because for me, I really want to have a scenario where you have a Brentford player going out in an England shirt in a major tournament and actually going out there and a tournament that they can win as well. And for me, you know, if he leaves in the summer but he's left as an England Euros winner, for me that is job done as far as I'm concerned. So that's why I'm very excited about kind of what's going to be happening in the summer. But anyway, forget about the Euros. Forget about all that nonsense, you know what I'm saying? We're going to go back to the weekend when we went up to Liverpool. We went up to Liverpool to go and check out Brentford taking on Liverpool and, fingers crossed, hopefully winning for the first time ever. All right, JB's got some stats on that and they're pretty incredible. In fact, actually just even scoring a goal. Anyway, we're going to come back after the break and we're going to talk about... So Liverpool, we went up to Liverpool and we actually went up on a little bit of a day trip this time. Normally we go up and we do an overnighter, and as everyone knows, it's, you know, it's a bit of an in-joke between our lot. You know what I do at the beginning of the season, I sit down and I look at the fixtures and I literally book. I spend about sort of like half a day booking hotels in every single fixture venue around the country for every possible date we're going to play them. And everyone laughs because they sort of come to me as a hotel broker because they know that I've got about sort of 8 or 9 or 10 hotels for every date that we might possibly be playing the game. And just coming back to England, I've actually had to go and do that now. I've looked at it and I've actually platted all the cities that England potentially could be playing in before the draw is made in a few weeks' time, and I'm going to literally take half a day to sit and plot up all the different hotels. So I'm going to have about 60, probably about 80 hotels booked within the next few days, in all the different combinations of where England is going to play. You might think, what the hell is going on here? But trust me, when the fixtures are announced and the prices go sky high, then it's all over. So you've got to get in early. So that's what I'm going to be doing over the weekend after we've beaten Arsenal. Oops, did I say that? Actually, kind of just want to rewind that one. But anyway, going back to the weekend, Liverpool. We went up there with, quite good hopes, actually. It's a bit of a rare one for us. Me and Lainey actually went up on the train, you know what I'm saying, with my daughter Bella and her friend as well, you know, Charlie. So we went up there, you know, a bit of cards on the train. It's a bit of an old school trip for us as well. And it's almost one of those ones where you can kind of, on the day, have a bit of anticipation looking forward to this match. And I think we went there just a little bit hopeful. We knew that Liverpool were a good side, but there was a little bit of hope in there that we might get something out of it, wasn't it, Laney?
Yeah, it was an absolutely cracking day. Really enjoyed it. Decent, not too early a start. But, a reasonable train time out. Had a few train beers, didn't we? Played a bit of cards. Couple of really good beers beforehand. Watched the game. Couple of good beers and a chat with the Liverpool characters after the game, and then me and you bickered all the way back on the train about the old days and how much better that they were than the new ones. So now that we also actually have a conversation about that on the pod in a few weeks, maybe the next international one. But yeah, overall a brilliant day out. It was one to remember. The result, not so much, I thought we did all right, and you know, Liverpool are champ, you know, they're competing for the title, whether they're going to be strong enough, but you know, we didn't really help ourselves. We created chances, but Brian Mbeumo couldn't do it all himself. He tried, but you know, we were missing someone else big up top to help out. But yeah, there were positives and there were negatives, but an interesting game. And a shame we had to finish that last kind of segment of the season on a losing note, because we'd won the other games since the previous international break. So yeah, it was, but you know, it's going to happen at this level.
And that's actually a flip side, because if you look at what happened last international, exactly a year ago, it was the exact opposite, where we came into that international break on a bit of a struggler. I mean, we drew with Forest, we'd lost a couple of games beforehand, and we thought, oh, what's going to be going on here? Then bang, we beat Man City. So again, these things, you know, there's swings and roundabouts, as they say. So like I said to you, we didn't get the result, you know, against Liverpool, but it was a good day out. Now, listen, you've heard what we've had to say a little bit, but we're going to go over and just relive thoughts of the fans, both Liverpool and Brentford fans, directly after the final whistle in the stands and also in the pub after the game.
I think Yarmolenko came on and Yarmolenko looked really, really good. I'd like to see Yarmolenko get a start on the wing at some point, maybe in an FA Cup game, maybe earlier than that. But I thought Yarmolenko was a plus side, and, you know, we come to Anfield, full stadium, we've not come away embarrassed at all. Unfortunately, at Anfield, we haven't quite got it together yet, but I really trust Thomas Frank to come back next year and get a win. I really do. I think that he works on this kind of thing, and Thomas Frank will be really hurting from this result, and he will want to come back and get a result.
In the last 10 minutes, we really turned it on with the passing game and stuff, but I don't know. If the goal was like 2 metres higher and just on the left, we would have bagged 5. So it was just one of those days, wasn't it?
Well, all I can say is, if it was rugby, we would have scored 15 points.
And why is that then? Explain to people that didn't see the game.
Over the top of the bar.
We created a fair bit. I think Liverpool were just a bit tidier with finishing their chances. I thought Salah was exceptional today. I think you could see the difference between Salah and Mbeumo, just in the way the ball sticks to Salah. I don't think you actually appreciate how good he is when you watch him on telly, but when you watch him in person and you see his close control, he's really second to nobody in this league in terms of that. But I actually thought we gave a reasonable account of ourselves. You know what? We're a patched-up team, and we were really patched-up today. Mads Roslev, he's no left back, and he's definitely no left wing back. And that's just, you could have played Yan out there maybe, but that's purely down to the fact that we've run out of players.
I think Brentford are very, very good at what they do. So set pieces, fantastic what they do. And you can see that they're very well organised. Final third, if Wembley had a bit more conviction, you get that goal back and it's a different game. But I think he just looks up, sees Alisson and just, scared's not the word, but he just doesn't know what to do. Sees a goalkeeper in front of him, doesn't know what to do. If he scores there, we're in trouble. There was a few times at the back where we played it round, and you're so close to just nicking the ball. That second goal basically killed you off, because they thought the ball was dead. I think the ball goes out, so everyone stops. And it's at that point where Brentford just go, yeah, we'll take this now.
I came here thinking that we might squeeze something out, and after the first half, actually was quite encouraged, because we put in a really good first half performance. Apparently, if you look at the XG stats, we did better than Liverpool on
it. Yeah, but you're not interested in that because you don't believe in that. It's all about the goals going to the back of the net, though, isn't it?
You took the words right out of my mouth. You took them out because, you know, Liverpool were clinical. They scored three great goals, good goals, not great goals, good goals, and we didn't have. And as Matt mentioned earlier at the start, if Mbeumo could trap the ball like Salah could, he wouldn't be playing for us. He would be playing on a really top three team.
I think a bit more clinical. I think the firepower we've got, Billy, just means that, you know, when the chances emerge or the chances present themselves, we put them away. And I'm sure you guys are looking at it and think the big chance at the Kop end at 0-0 and it's a 1-1 and there's a couple at the start of the second half as well. And, you know, if those had gone in, but for us, you know, the firepower we've got, Mo Salah only gets two chances a day and scores them both. And I think that's the difference between us this year and maybe a couple of years ago, is that obviously Salah's been here for all that time, but there's five forwards now who are at a real elite level, and if one of them's having a bad day, the others normally step up. And so, yeah, we're pretty formidable this season, not necessarily because we're tearing teams apart or we're dominating 90 minutes, but because of the firepower we've got, we're able to put these chances away. So
we get to grips with what Brentford are good at about 30 minutes, and that makes it a little bit more straightforward. Still not easy, because Brentford are good at what they're good at. Brilliant from breakdowns, brilliant from restarts, dead switched on in terms of where to pick the ball up and recover it. Loads of good direct running. You know, it's a good side. It's a side I quite like to watch. The extent to which is missed Rico Henry is hard to put into words. I think it's striking to me that you miss him well more than you miss Tony. I think you miss him so much, because you can't play through the thirds the way you like to, because he can carry the ball 30, 40 yards at any point. That's what he's good at. And you haven't really got that out to relieve the pressure at times when you need it.
I wasn't scared, no.
You said you were worried.
No, Liverpool had two bad games on the bounce.
You said you were worried.
No, Liverpool had two bad games on the bounce. I was worried Liverpool would have a third game on the bounce. But I knew Liverpool were too strong for Brentford all day long.
Tell you something.
If
you
know, we turned up, we would roast Brentford. And really, we did. We turned up. And what did Brentford do? Buck all night with a shot on target, I remember.
It's brilliant. It's brilliant.
You caught that all you want.
It's brilliant. You turn the microphone on and the story changes.
Yeah. Yes, he's by Scouser.
Yeah.
I mean, he did make a few points, you know. You know, you could say we didn't turn up, but I think we did. I thought Liverpool were just better than us. 3-0 looks like a smashing, and I think, you know, I haven't heard what's come before on the podcast, but you know, it didn't feel like a 3-0 game. I've had a good day out, and now I'm gonna cough on.
There you have it. The fans after the game. Liverpool fans, I mean, listen, you know, somebody else said to me, he listened to the podcast and he said to me, oh my word, he goes, that's some, in fact, there's a few people actually had listened to it who don't normally listen as well. They listened in, they said, oh, do you normally get that? I mean, you've got the opposition fans on there and there's like a really good dialogue between you and it's actually really balanced and it's really, you know, and the thing about it is, again, you know, in general, you know, we've done this down the years, you know, whether or not it's the Championship, you know, which, you know, I love, you know, I want to be back there later. Maybe we won't talk about that, but you know what I'm saying? But the fans down there as well, they come on. And they, because they talk football. If you've got football people, they want to talk football, and they'll turn around if they lose and they say, look, we were rubbish and we did X, Y, and Z, or you were a great side, or you were lucky, and you get that conversation. And there was loads of that going on that podcast, and it was really good. You know, we lost the game and you're a bit gutted to lose the game, but sometimes it's almost like quite therapeutic to go and sit down there, talk to your opposition who aren't necessarily lording it up too much, except for that one guy, sort of Stone Island man, who switched as soon as you turned the microphone on, as you heard him there, you know, saying beforehand, is going, oh, I was really scared of Brentford. Oh, I was really worried about them. I thought they're going to give us a right good Tolkien, you know, blah, this, that, and the other. Oh, and then afterwards he's going, no, I didn't. I always thought we were going to smash you. Like, you know, but other than that, people are normally quite balanced. And I thought there was some really good opinions after that match.
Yeah, I agree. And I always find that the home big club fans are more kind of philosophical and nice when they've beaten you. They're a knowledgeable bunch, the Scousers, you know, whether it's Everton or Liverpool fans. They know their football. They love their football. They are, although they've, you know, been at the top table all of my adult life, they are kind of pretty much rounded. Of course, they think that their own teams, deserve or should be righteously at the top of the division the whole time. But, you know, that's the way it has been. They get used to that. But I haven't felt patronised as being a Brentford fan on any of the trips to Merseyside. There's not that looking down their nose at us. I think they actually are. I think they're honest enough to realise that we're not just plucky underdogs that are here for one or two seasons.
We are good at what we do there, apparently.
Yeah, of course we're good at what we do, which is like the ultimate backhanded compliment. It's like, I mean, I just have to say, like any team that's got, who's got their long ball merchants in the team, they can't lecture us. You know, Alexander Arnold that literally kicks it from his own half to cross it into the area a lot of the time. You know,
but he does it in a creative way, Laney. He's very creative.
Yeah, he's good at what he does. Yeah, he's good at what he does. Yeah. So you know what I mean? You know, if you're gonna play long ball yourself, that's got to count as long ball as well. You know, you can't just be other teams that play it. And when you lump it long, it's creative. You know, it's hypocrisy there. But yeah, you know, I enjoy speaking to the Scousers. They're a good bunch on the whole.
Yeah, and if anything, and I'm not putting a downer on it, it's for me, again, it's a shame that Ivan Toney, who is a Liverpool fan, it looks like, you know, this is probably the last opportunity to have seen him scored at Anfield in a Brentford shirt. Okay, I'm not putting a downer on it, but, you know, next season, if he's still there, it's going to be an absolute miracle. But anyway, but that's the way that it goes. Just going back to the game, lots of people talked about on that podcast about how, you know, if we were playing rugby, we'd have got 15 points. You know, if the goals a couple of inches higher, you know, we would have scored lots of goals. You know, basically they're saying that we weren't on target. I mean, the stats wise, again, you know, just traditional stats wise, I mean, it was actually 17 shots to Liverpool, 16 shots to Brentford. You know, it means that there was a lot of shooting going on. We actually only had three on target. But if you're going down to the XG, and I know that the Gowler is going to be talking about this a little bit later as well, XG wise, Liverpool had 1.71 to our 1.68, which means that, again, I know everyone says, oh, but you didn't score goals. Forget that, right? It just means that it was one of those ones where it could have been 1-1, it could have been 2-2, it could have been 2-1, either way, to Brentford or to Liverpool. Kind of one of those scenarios, just depends on what happens, you know what I'm saying? At the end of the day, it was a 3-0 win to Liverpool. And we said it, the Liverpool fans said it, is that the difference between the two is that they were more clinical than us. On another day, Brian and Bumo may have scored that goal, which would have put us 1-0 ahead, and it was a completely different game. You just never know. But I think the point I'm saying to you is that you sit down and you say it's a 3-0 game. Again, AFTV Turkish, who's on there a little bit later, said, mate, that weren't a 3-0 game. You know what I'm saying? I thought you were unlucky. You just didn't get them chances. So it is very, very much fine margins. And we went away a little bit disappointed, but probably not despondent, because we knew that we'd actually had actually created something, particularly with a team with a lot of players out.
Yeah, I agree with a lot of those comments, but, you know, it never really felt, it didn't feel like a 3-0 defeat, but at the same time, it never really felt that we were going to get much out of it, especially going to get a win out of it. And I know the VAR disallowed goals, they kind of warp it a bit, and you have to wipe those out because they don't count in chances, and you obviously always expect to be under the cosh up at Anfield with that team, with Mo Salah in that team, and, you know, the players that they've got, you know, they've got some cracking players there, so to be going quite close over the game in creating good chances, then I think there's a lot to be taken from that. You know, we know that we're light up top. We know that we're still, we've got injuries in key areas. We're going to say it again. You know, Rico out and Ivan Toney out, and Raya out. And that might sound like a broken record with those three, but it does take a lot of transition. And I was surprised to see Flecken back in the team after Strakosha played so well the previous week. But, you know, he didn't really do much wrong either.
He pulled some really good saves.
He did. It was a decent game for him. And there was, like, you know, there were really, you know, it, once you've taken 3-0 on the chin and you've taken the defeat and you kind of, like, you know, you understood that you're going to get nothing out of it, there were big positives. I thought, you know, Brian and Bumo again had an absolutely outstanding game. He was everywhere. He was playing the role of two men. And, you know, Yarmolukh coming on, he put in a brilliant 10, 15 minutes. He looked excellent. He looked someone that's so hungry to seize his chance and get given more minutes. And I think we have to work out a way of getting him in the team, because he is direct, he's strong. He's got something about him that, you know, the Yanelt factor, someone who's going to come in, I'm very different positions, but someone who's going to come in and once they're there, you're not going to get rid of them because they're going to be consistent. I got that vibe about him. So we're a bit weak in certain other areas. So I just hopefully he can stay fit. So we are going to miss a couple of people through injury probably, on top of existing doubts for the Arsenal game. But yeah, Yarmolenko for me, he was the brightest star of the day.
Yeah, and interestingly, again, a lot of fans talked about him on the post-match podcast. You know, like I said to you, you talk about positives. You talk about positives in the match, especially when you get negatives like that. So what you do is you try and highlight what the positives are. Almost like pre-season friendlies, where you go inside there and what you're trying to do is you're trying to find, okay, what are we going to get out of this game here? Okay, it's not necessarily about the result, but it's about what we're going to get out of this game. And Yarmolenko was definitely the big positive out of this game. And the interesting thing, if a lot of Bees fans don't know about him, obviously you know that we were in for Mudryk very, very early, as Brentford always are. And we were in for Mudryk very early. If we'd nabbed him very early, be interesting to see what would happen if he's actually come to Brentford as opposed to gone to Chelsea. Maybe it might have been a better home for him to develop as a player, but we don't know. So he's gone off to Chelsea under much hype, and there's a lot of pressure for him there. The moment it came out, when everybody else came in for him after the war had happened, because we tried to get him before the war and it didn't quite happen. After the war, Chelsea and Arsenal all came in for him, and the price had gone up from like 12 million to like 70 or 80 million or something ridiculous. So we were out the picture then. But then we went in for Mudryk, okay? We went in for Yarmolenko as well. And we went in for Yarmolenko, who was much more below the radar. Absolutely below the radar, he was. And we've got one of our, as we know, we've got chums, we've got tomatoes all over the world as well. And we've been chatting to one of our chums about the Mudryk scenario, who was feeding us information about the Mudryk situation. So we knew what was going on the whole time over in the Ukraine. He's obviously not in the Ukraine anymore, but he was at the time. And then he just informed us. He's going, you're going for Yarmolenko. He goes, wow. He goes, this player potentially is even better than Mudryk. He's younger than him. He's potentially better than him, but he's going to need quite a lot of development because he's younger and he's much rawer. But he goes, potentially he really is the real deal. Like, you know, so he was very, very excited that we'd gone for him. He came into our B team. He's developed in our B team. He's been in our B team sort of quite a long time. He's been there, I think, over a year, probably 18 months or so. But it just goes to show you where they see that trying to get him up to speed. And I trust our lot implicitly. And I'm actually really confident that seeing him now, I think they're thinking, right, he's now moving into next gear phase. And I think Yarmolenko is going to be a key player for us. Maybe not this season, but next season, I think, when he can absolutely, we do a close season in the Southeast Asia. And then he goes out there in Southeast Asia and does the business and comes back. And as long as he doesn't get injured like all our 17 players we have at the moment now, I think he's going to be very, very good.
Yeah, it's another example of us plucking someone from obscurity and turning them into a Premier League ready replacement or an improvement. You know, we've been looking for those players that can kind of run with the ball at pace and with power, and he's emerging as exactly that. And I thought there was other highlights. I thought Wiese played all right. As we mentioned, Brian and Bumo. And then I thought Christopher Ayer was okay. He had a couple of good runs down the wing. He just signed a new contract, which is great as well. That kind of shows us some versatility on the right. For Norgaard and Jensen, again, they look good. Mee was back, and there were positive. It wasn't a bad performance. It certainly wasn't a humiliation. And we are a very, very decent Premier League outfit, and it was just underlined. But Liverpool are a cut above with Mo Salah in the team. So yeah, you know, it was a shame it ended 3-0, but you know, I'm sure we can bounce back on Saturday evening.
Yeah, I'll tell you what we're going to do as well. We actually did it might have been part of a podcast, or maybe it was a separate podcast itself on Yarmolik as well, but we had our chum, actually, he actually did a piece, and he did an audio piece as well on Yarmolik as itself, and we could see if we could actually dig that out, because I think it'd be very interesting, because it was done over a year ago. It was done about a year and a little bit ago when we signed him. Like I said, he's done that piece, but I'm just looking at the comments, and you know, he's chatting to him, and what he said to me, he said, you know, congratulations, you've got a real talent there for next to nothing. He said, get him down the gym for a year. So already, I mean, this is a guy, he said to us already, like, you know, he's obviously not big, he's not fit enough, so you need to get him down the gym for a year before he's even ready to step into the first team. You know, he says, well, I said, what position? He said he can play across the midfield. He's a creative ball player. He needs to develop physically, but his technical ability is immense. He said he's a different type of player to Mudryk. He said that he's light years ahead of where Mudryk was as an 18-year-old. Okay. And so that was his vibe. So, you know, it's just giving you an idea. And then, like I said to you, about this whole idea about Brentford plucking in players out early and identifying these players and putting them in there. So, like I said to you, he is kind of potentially could be the Mudryk, but even better than Mudryk. So that makes me feel good. And this is for next season. So feeling very happy there indeed. Are you feeling happy, lady?
I am, yeah. It's good to be buzzing about players rather than just kind of thinking, oh, we need to get to the next transfer window because we're not good enough, you know, or we're too weak. Yeah, we do need to do that as well. And, you know, there will be players coming in, I'm 100% sure. But it's nice to see, you know, the fringe players emerging and kind of making you think, oh, hold on, maybe we're all right in certain areas where we thought we were a bit deficient. So, yeah, exciting times.
Exactly, exciting time. So listen, we've got JB, he's got his facts and his funk, and he's going to talk about all sorts of Liverpool losses, goals that we don't score, 1889, and all sorts of stuff. Let's go over to JB and let's listen to his facts and his funk.
Jonathan Birchall back again. If winning at Stamford Bridge and beating West Ham was out of the form book over the previous couple of fixtures, so unfortunately was a Premier League defeat at Liverpool. Although we were 1-0 down at half time, we had gone 18 Premier League games since we last lost both halves of a game. That was a 2-0 defeat at Wolves back in April. But alas, there was no comeback this time. In the second half, Liverpool scored two goals after the hour mark. There's an increasing pattern this season, as all our goals conceded after the break has happened after the clock has hit the 60th minute. In total, 59% of our conceded goals so far have come in the second half. Last season it was 50%, and in our first, 48%. Since our last win at Anfield, a 4-3 in November 1937, our last fixture was the 8th trip in League and Cup. We've lost all 8 of these, and in 7 of them, we've failed to score. The only Brentford player to put his name on the score sheet in the last 85 years is Roger Cross in a League Cup visit in 1974. A season where we were in the fourth tier and Liverpool finished as runners-up in the top tier. But playing in front of a crowd of 50,000 would have been like a dream to the 11 Brentford players who took to the field this week in 1889 in a game against Kew. This was the club's first ever match, which ended in a 1-1 draw. Probably played in front of just a handful of friends and relatives. Although, realistically, they were not likely to have seen very much, as with a 3:30 kickoff in November, years before floodlights were used, and in a steady drizzle, the end of the match must have been barely visible to players and supporters alike.
So there you go, JB, facts and funk and... Typical Brentford, eh, Laney? They don't want to go up. They absolutely don't want to go. I mean, even in 1889, they don't want to go up. I mean, they could only draw with Q. I mean, rubbish. Draw with Q. I mean, that's really bad, isn't it?
Yeah, you're rubbish. But I mean, I it's a bit of a shame actually, because we were both invited to the unveiling of the plaque. I don't know if you knew that Bees United done brilliantly to fund and organise with the council permission to put a plaque up by Kew Bridge, right on the site of the Oxford and Cambridge pub where the decision was made to form a football team from the Brentford Rowing Club back in 1889. So JB was the person that delivered a really moving speech, really, really poignant speech on Wednesday morning. I wasn't able to do that for a reason I won't go into at the moment, but it's just it was just like really, really good to be celebrating the club's heritage still, even though, you know, we're at a level now we could only have dreamt about 20 years ago. You have to keep looking back and recognising the people that made the key decisions in allowing us to be here today. I just again pat on the back to Bees United for doing that. And there's a few others, you know, they probably have thought about this, and it's something that I thought about back in the day, but it's difficult to find the time to do it. But, you know, if other plaques could probably be provided on the sites where we had previous grounds and pubs where we had changing rooms, because before that first ever match we got changed in the Griffin and then walked across the road and played the game down Clifton Road, and then we used the plough up at Northfields, next to Ben's Field, a few times as changing rooms. There could be a plaque on the wall there, could be part of a tour. And obviously where we've had previous grounds, there probably should be something to mark that as well. So, yeah, I mean, lots of ideas. There's no rush for that, but it'd be quite nice just to mark that. And when we were moving ground, there was talk about having the approach roads to the new stadium called Harry Curtis Way or Curtis Road, or just to reflect the first great Brentford manager who took us from the lower leagues up to the top flight. In the late 20s and early 30s, something should be a permanent reminder to his name, and as well as a statue. There should be a Harry Curtis statue at some time near the new stadium or near Griffin Park, but probably the new stadium, I'd say. So, yeah, lots of ideas to be going forward with. But, yeah, again, a pat on the back for what you've actually done this week, and I'll go down there and have a look at that before the game on Saturday.
Yeah, and my belief is as well, I think that the and as JB said there as well, I think that the only time we've actually scored a goal against Liverpool was in the Harry Curtis years. We've actually only ever scored one goal against Liverpool.
Up at Anfield.
So I was about to say up at Anfield, and that was in the Harry Curtis era as well. So again, you know, just drawing in all these parallels as well. Tell you something, before we actually kind of move on to looking towards the future, Lainey, just going back to last week, we have to talk briefly because it was something that was talked about quite a bit on the post-match podcast. You can catch that on prideofwest.london, the post-Liverpool match podcast. Definitely worth a listen, honestly. It was a good chat, even though we lost. It's really, really good to have a good listen to that and to hear what the fans have got to say, especially there's a good mix of opposition fans and Brentford fans on there as well. But we talked about the atmosphere in the away end, which we can talk about probably a little bit more kind of level-headed now rather than after the game where we're a little bit kind of peeved off about it. But the atmosphere in the away end was peculiar, to say the least, wasn't it? And the reason why we say that is that what we felt is that, you know, we looked around, and I think was it you that turned around to me and we looked around, we sort of said, you know, we know Brentford fans, you've seen them travel home and away, we got absolutely no problem with new fans coming in and new fans kind of coming to our club and support our club, because this is what it's all about, you know what I'm saying? And obviously as you grow as a club, you get people who support them, then as enthusiastic about you. We've even interviewed them on these podcasts, you know, we've got newer kids, younger kids chatting them, and they're like even more enthusiastic than you. Yeah, yeah, like Chelsea. Yeah, I always knew we were going to beat Chelsea. Yeah, you know, and all this kind of stuff, which I think is really great. It was very different at Liverpool because we went there, we turned around, I think it was you or somebody said, look, I don't recognise anyone around us. That's not necessarily an issue because if everyone's going absolutely garrity when we score, going really, really potty, that's not a problem. But the atmosphere was really dull. Now, some people may turn around and say, but that's a Sunday 2 o'clock kickoff. That always happens, but it wasn't that. It was the fact that you can tell that there were a lot of people around us that were either neutral or neutrals who were there to watch Liverpool, or probably even just Liverpool fans who couldn't get tickets in the home end. And it was really, really obvious. You know, we were trying to start up songs. Other people trying to start up songs. We've talked to lots of people about this because we thought we need to get the atmosphere going. Listen, Brentford want to pick up 3 points. We need to have a rocking away end. But we weren't having that at all. And it's almost like those people were looking at you like you were just mad. You know what I'm saying? And you could see that they were kind of there for having a day out. However they got their tickets, we don't know, but it didn't add to the atmosphere. Now, we realise there's two things here. Brentford, it's our third season in the Premier League. Things are going to change. Everyone would have gone to Liverpool. Everyone wanted to go to Liverpool first season. Some people would have gone to second season. This season now, they'll pick and choose. It's a Sunday afternoon. The trains are all messed up. They've got to get the kids back to school. It's going to be getting them back late, and they've got to go to work the next day. So they'll be making some decisions. You know. So what do? Do you still take your full complement of 3,000 people? Do you halve it to 1,500? Or do you allow, you know, other characters to come, you know, who may actually affect the match-going experience of the Brentford fans who go all the way up there? It was really peculiar, wasn't it, Lainey?
Yeah, it wasn't good at all. It affected the day out. I have to admit, it wasn't a sing-song. You know, it was difficult in that setup. I know it's always difficult when you got, you know, when it's all seated, that you can't move around, so you can't kind of mob up and get the singing sort of going. It's difficult when it's kind of sprawled out over that kind of quite big away end. But it was worse. It was worse than I can remember. And looking around, not recognising everyone. I mean, I know we often joke. When you're abroad and you bump into someone and you go, oh, I know a Brentford fan. Do you know Johnny Smith? And you go, yeah, well, I don't know him by name, but I probably do know him to look at, because like you over the years you get to know a lot of people, and there was none of that. I was looking around going, who are these people? You know, and it was just not right. I don't know what we can do to, you know, is it better to have that than a completely sparse away end?
But also, not to interrupt, I mean, we had a kid with, you know, with a Liverpool tracksuit and all that lot in front of us, which is, you know, it may have come with his mum. Is that right or is that wrong? But other people had experience where they said that people were probably in there with their Liverpool scarves and cheering when Liverpool scored and everything like that. Now, we're not a sort of kind of like, you know, get off my land type team, you know, but it's kind of like, hold on a second here. How is this to happen? And it's a really difficult scenario. Now, it's interesting because I saw this a piece on social media a couple of weeks beforehand where Burnley fans who had gone to Arsenal, and they were complaining, saying, all right, so this is the end of the road now. You know, it's really embarrassing. We've turned up at Arsenal and basically our end is full of Arsenal fans, right, who obviously couldn't get tickets in the Arsenal end, you know, and they were really bemoaning it. I was thinking, cool, that's not great. You know, that's like, how did that come about? And they're going, yeah, that's what happens when you put tickets on general sale, which means anyone can get them. So it's not something that is just common to us. It's common to quite a lot of teams. And then after that, there was an article in the Athletic, which talked about basically how the sort of new inverted commas trend is fans buying tickets in the opposition end. Obviously, when the opposition are unable to sell tickets, or opposition fans might buy tickets because they get access to them, not willing to go to the game, realizing that they can get 100 quid for them or 150 quid for these tickets. So they go off and they sell these tickets, you know, especially like something like Liverpool. It's like, wow, like, you know, I've got access to Liverpool tickets and I'm a bit skint this week, so I can actually make 300 quid by buying two tickets for me and my son, or, you know, me and my mate. And there you go. So there's a combination of things kind of happening out here, which we understand why they happen. I'm absolutely not against fans. Listen, I love fans coming and watching football and getting involved and watching our team. And even if it's an away game, which we can't fill up, but they come down there and they want to support your team and make some noise, they're welcome to come down, you know, especially if it's one of those things. I do have a little bit of a problem where you've got actual opposition fans who are going to come inside there in large numbers, right, and affect my match going experience going to an away game. And we did speak to the powers that be actually on the train on the way back. To be fair, again, this is the kind of club that we are at Brentford, and we can speak to, you know, certain people in high positions of power, and we say to them, look, this is what's going on. And they came back to us and they said to us, baby, we might need to have a little conversation about how we can move this forward. But one of our suggestions is, look, you've got one end at Brentford which was always sold as an end where there's going to be lots of noise. It was the
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
I stand, okay, and people bought tickets before even we had a safe standing area. In the end, knowing unofficially that area, you stand up and you make lots of noise. So the fans in there have a particular type of mentality. My argument is that saying is that why don't the club try and sell tickets? We've had this before. Let's not call it, and there's a whole thing about having a singing section and that's tin pot and this, that, the other, but this is becoming a bit of a problem where they say, all right, tell you what, we're going to put you lot in this area and we're going to sell it in this area, okay? And all of you lot will be together and we know that you're a particular type of fan. Not saying the other fans are not, but to solve this issue rather than have two people in one corner, four people in another corner, all trying to whip up the crowd into a bit of a frenzy. And that will at least try to alleviate the situation. So if you get people like that who come to Brentford games, right? People who come to Brentford games who are not the fans, they won't be kind of mixed up in the middle. They'll be kind of on the fringes somewhere and it won't be affected as much because you'll still be able to have to get a caucus of people to make noise. Idea, yeah. Laney?
Yeah, it is an idea. I don't think either of us have got the exact solution to the problem, but I think it's right to highlight there is a problem and there needs to be some sort of dialogue with fans groups and people that travel to every away game and people that kind of want it to get better. It's easy, you know. What I don't want to do is like fall into the trap of saying, oh, it's ruined, everything's wrong now. It's not as good as it was the first season in the Prem for a couple of reasons. You're right to say that maybe, you know, you've been up there the last couple of times and it being a Sunday afternoon and what have you, it made it really difficult for this to be the one to go to. But it's what we do with the tickets that aren't going to, you know, home and awayers. There needs to be a better solution to what's happening at the moment, because it with the right imaginations and with the right solution, we can get that atmosphere there. And it shouldn't be a library or away in, because the atmosphere at Anfield, to start with, was pretty awful. It did pick up, you know, but when they had the ball in the net and after they scored the goal, when things were starting to go their way, there was some more singing coming from, you know, from all around Anfield. But to start with, it was pretty dire. So maybe they have the same situation as well. But our problem.
Well, they do, because the Anfield rep on the podcast, they said it's been a problem for years now at Liverpool.
Yeah. So. I know. I mean, you know, yeah, I agree. But I mean, I think it's right to focus on, you know, sorting our own problems out. And, you know, I think it can be sorted, but it's not going to get sorted unless there is a big, you know, amount of dialogue about this. And it's not necessarily just about us talking about it on here. Some, you know, fan groups do need to pick up this baton and try and get a resolution, because it's only going to get worse. And then what happens is you get people, you know, like us and a lot of others that, you know, been going home and away for donkey's years, that kind of go, oh, I'm not sure I could put up with that the sort of like insipid atmosphere away. It's going to cost, you know, God knows what it cost us as a day out, you know, a couple of hundred quid each probably. Is it worth it just to sit there and look around me wondering who everyone is? And, you know, we're very not against new fans, and we're very not against sort of like introducing the next wave of bees at all. That's really not what we're saying. But what we are saying is that, you know, we should be able to take, you know, 2,000-3,000 away and guarantee an atmosphere no matter how that away end is made up.
100%, Laney. So listen, you know, like I say, hopefully there'll be more conversations about this. Keep our fingers crossed, like I said to you, more conversations about this down the line. And let's just see how it goes. But like I said to you, the most important thing is that we have a good away days. We get people who enjoy themselves when they go to away days. And, you know, listen, we're not knocking people for coming to watch our team, because like we love our team and we know a lot of people love the Bees as well. So like I said to you, it's more about getting a scenario which works for everybody. And as the powers to be have said, you know, the problem is, like, you know, we talked about, you know, do we limit to say 1,500 away tickets? And he said the problem with that is that you don't grow the club because you're stopping people who may have started to support the club more recently who haven't got the taps to get tickets. You know what I'm saying? Whereas it just wouldn't be kind of occupied by top tappers as it is, which, you know, the top tappers might say, yeah, that's great because we've been for years and we make lots of noise. But there's also an argument to say, but who says that somebody who hasn't got those top taps won't make the noise? So it's kind of a scenario is that how do you make the people who want to kind of be part of the kind of away fan experience and to make it proper, and how do you get them in as opposed to kind of just all the people who basically shouldn't be there? But anyway, listen, talking about just finally, we're going to talk about this match. Actually, we've got the Gowler, we've got the Bees breakdown, Fosse. Okay, the Gowler, based in the States, and he sits down and he analyzes every single Brentford game from a statistical and tactical point of view. And he's analyzed the Arsenal game. He's actually analysed the Liverpool game, and he's actually looked forward to the Arsenal game. And he's going to give us the lowdown on the Liverpool match and look forward to the Arsenal game.
Hey, this is Jacob Galler with Bees Breakdown. So Brentford ended with 1.5 XG to Liverpool's 1.4, but Liverpool's post-shot XG was 2.13, which just goes to show how they made the most out of their chances. Brentford only had 3 shots on target, but a few good chances in the final third didn't connect. Jensen did really well creating chances seemingly out of nothing with his long passing. He connected on 4 out of 5 long passes, but a lot of what he does isn't going to stand out on the stat sheet unless Brentford are finishing their chances. Still, he ended with 0.5 XAG, while Mbeumo finished with 8 shot creating actions, which was the most for either team. Liverpool's 6.59 PPDA shows how Liverpool's counter-pressing gave the Bees trouble, which we saw in that first Liverpool goal. And then when Liverpool were in possession in their own half, they were very efficient at beating Brentford's high press and easily progressing the ball. I thought that something that was really interesting was after the Bees were losing possession when building out of the back a few times, that's when Flecken started launching goal kicks and Ben Mee was in a very advanced role to try to win the ball high up the pitch. And with 3 at the back, there's still plenty of cover, so it allowed him to get forward in those situations. And that's something I think we're going to see even more against Arsenal, which leads us into that Arsenal preview. So Arsenal are 3rd in the Premier League with the lowest XGA. They've only allowed opposing teams to create 9.2 XG, and they're highly overperforming their own XG. They've scored 4 more goals than expected this season, but some of that is due to being given the most penalty kicks. But even taking penalties out of that, they've still scored 2.5 more goals than expected. And it's not surprising that they've had the most penalty kicks because they have the 2nd most passes into the penalty area and the 2nd most touches in the penalty area. But surprisingly, they haven't taken a direct shot off a free kick yet this season. They're the only team that hasn't. And their XG has been lower this season than last, but so has their XGA. So they're relying on building up in wide areas instead of attacking centrally this season. And that's caused a decline in their XG, but they also aren't giving up as many chances to opposing teams because of that. And against big 6 sides, you know, game state's going to be huge. And the good news is that Arsenal have yet to score a goal this season in the first 15 minutes of a match, which is exactly what Brentford's going to need. But the bad news is that Arsenal have scored 8 goals in the last 15 minutes of matches, which is also the time in the match where Brentford have allowed the most XGA this season. So that's definitely a tough task for the Bees.
So, listen, there you go. Bees breakdown, the Gowler. Just quickly, we're going to talk about Arsenal in a minute, but I just want to say Liverpool, effective at creating goal-scoring opportunities from the flanks, strong at finishing. They had no significant weaknesses, according to whoscored.com. Brentford created a high number of chances relative to our possession. We effective at creating goal-scoring opportunities from set pieces, but we were poor at finishing. All the top-rated players were all Liverpool players. Salah, Tamika, Sir Jota, Nunes, and Van Dijk, who I thought he had a great game as well, Van Dijk. As well, so those are all the top players. So it kind of gives a reflection as to kind of, you know, as to where we're at, you know, from that game. But listen, you know, we move forward from that. Like I said to you, lots of positives as well from that game, and hopefully we'll be able to take them into the Arsenal game. And we're playing Arsenal Saturday, 5:30 kickoff on TNT Sport. And if you want to check TNT as well, I've got a little feature actually on TNT Sport as well. I did a little TV feature for them a few weeks ago, shooting at Griffin Park, or New Griffin Park as we call it, and just talking about the Bees and how much we love the Bees and how well we're doing in the Premier League at the moment now. So check that out. Like I said to you, I think it's going to be dropping before the match on TNT Sport, and I think it's going to be going on to a load of social media as well, so which is all good. But just coming back to the Arsenal game, Laney, they were quite good last season, and they seem to be quite good this season. It could be a bit tricky for us, don't you think?
It's going to be really tricky for us, yeah. we've had a sniff of what they're about. You know, we played them in the Caribou Cup, you know, a month or so back, 2 months back. We gave them a really good game. It was a very weakened Brentford team, and we gifted them the winning goal. And we were chasing the game after that, and there was a stage in the second half where we scared the life out of them, and we're going to need to do that again. We need to get them on the back foot and be good at what we're good at, as so many people say to us. We need things to go our way, like you always do against the top teams. But I'm not looking at this game thinking like we were sort of last year. I don't think they're at that level of consistency yet. I mean, I know they've only lost one game, and I thought they were actually trying to go unbeaten again for another whole season, which is the 20th anniversary of them doing that the first time this season. So I thought Arteta had his eye on that Arsene Wenger record, yet another gold trophy. So we welcome a team who, again, another one that are going for the title. They'll go close. They won't, though. I don't think they'll win it. I think it's City's again. But we stand every chance of doing some damage to their title challenge again. We clipped their wings at the Emirates last season. We got a point, and they're still crying about that. And I think there's every reason that we can actually beat them, I think, this time. I think under the lights on a Saturday night, it means we can have a couple of more beers. We can really get up for this. And I think the atmosphere inside the G-Tech is going to be absolutely bonkers good. And if the team can give us, come out of the traps, and we can get our noses in front, or do what we do and stay in the game until late, I think is a big finish under the lights. And I think it could be a night to remember, mate.
Yeah, fingers crossed. So listen, I mean, we've got Turkish from AFTV. I had a good chat with him, actually. I went down to the ground. They did a little feature down at the ground. They did, the pre-match pint as well with Brentford as well. And like I said to you, we had a good chat with Turkish. I've done, numerous box-to-boxes, as we call it, with AFTV. I like doing it with Turkish because he gives you the opportunity just to speak and talk about football. It's not no shock jocking, as they say. He doesn't go for that. It's like about a long form talking about football. So I had a little chat with him on the AFTV, and then we got him on our channel just to talk about Arsenal. Let's have a little listen to what Turkish from AFTV had to say about Arsenal. So here we go. We've got a big game, as we know, on Saturday. 5:30 kickoff. It's on the TV. It's on TNT, or BT Sport, as people commonly know it as well. You know what I'm saying? So like I said, live on the box, Bees, and it's almost like this team set us off on the right path. Arsenal came down to New Griffin Park on a Friday night, and boom, 2-0. And all of a sudden, our Premier League journey had started. Now, I spoke to this person here that I've got with me now the day before that match. It was the day before that match, and I had no idea what was going to be going down. He had no idea what was going to be going down. At the time, he thought, actually, Brentford, they've just come up. We're going to be all right. And he was absolutely stunned. Now, we're two and a bit seasons on now. We've got Turkish from AFTV in the house. Turkish, how you doing?
I'm good, man. Pleasure being on. Thank you for the invite.
That's all good, man. It's good to have you on. So just talking about that game, you know what I'm saying? I mean, that time, I mean, moving on two and a bit years now, how is that period for you in Brentford world?
I think we've come a long way. And by we, I think both clubs have come a long way since that day. Initially, you know, going up against a newly promoted side for your first game of the season is the exact way you want the first game of the season to go. But I remember Arsenal's transfer window that year didn't fill me with much optimism. Ben White, Ramsdale were two of the signings who, look, when I say we've come a long way in the last 2 years, I look at Ben White and Ramsdale as key parts of us coming a long way in the last 2 years. But at the time, I couldn't get my head around some of the signings. We stroll up to New Griffin Park and we get turned over. And it set you on your ways. I think now, 2.5 years later, Brentford are a club that newly promoted clubs look at, a club that clubs in the Premier League look at and work, trying to work out how are Brentford so, you know, sustainable? Why have Brentford come into the league and you know, become part of the furniture when a lot of clubs struggle up, down, up, down? And with Arsenal, I mean, you know, we finished 8th in 2021 and we just challenged City for a Premier League title in 2023. So I look at both clubs since that infamous fixture now. I say infamous, it's infamous from the Arsenal perspective. And think, look, we've both come a long way. I think Arteta learnt from that himself. And Brentford's have really kicked on from there.
And tell us honestly, how did you feel after seeing Brentford beat Arsenal that day? Honestly, how did you feel?
I just felt I'm in for another long season, Billy. I just felt like game week one, here we go again. I've always felt Arsenal should be at the top table. Arsenal should be fighting for Premier League titles, should be qualifying for Champions League and competing in that competition. But we was a far cry off that heading into that season. And to start game week one with a loss at a newly promoted side, devastating. It just felt like we were in for another season in game week one that we can just write off come game week 38. And it's not a good place to be at mentally after the first game of the season when you feel like, well, what are we playing for?
So let's just move on 12 months. The following season, okay, so the following season, I mean, that because that season was so-so for Arsenal, but the following season, you had a much better season. Just quickly, talk us through that season, maybe a couple of games and everything like that, and give it a mark out of 10.
We're talking about last season here, right? Well, last season, the Premier League tried to do us with another away fixture on a Friday night. Crystal Palace this time, a team that, you know, they regular in evening fixtures, Mondays, Fridays, whenever it is, they tend to give us a game, if not beat us. And we started the season in completely different fashion to the Brentford game. We faced up to Palace, we stood up to the test, we got the win, we got the clean sheet, and it felt like a turning of the corner because it really felt like the Premier League was putting us in it, giving us another Friday night fixture to kick off the season, all eyes on Arsenal again, away from home. And we stood up to the test. And I think when you look at the Brentford game at the start of the 2021-22 season and you look at the game against Palace at the start of the 22-23 season, it's like chalk and cheese. We was a lot more mature in that Palace game. You know, we had a style of play, we had a direction, and we were coming off a summer that many looked at as one of our best summers in a long time with signings like Jesus and Zinchenko and so on.
So that season, so just talk to us, I mean, that season, give it the marks out of 10, because also, you know, that's how it started, but how did it finish? Because you were there, it was a close to no cigar, I mean, it was a bit close but no cigar, wasn't it?
Bit close but no cigar indeed, and I'm really after a cigar, I believe, if I'm honest with you. A rating out of 10, I'd say I'd give it if I'm just talking Premier League, I'm going to give it a 7. I think we let ourselves down in cup competitions, but if we're just going to talk about Premier League, I'll give it a 7. And a lot of people might ask, a 7? And I'm not saying Brentford fans would ask, it's more so some Arsenal fans and maybe fans of other big six clubs. 7 out of 10, you didn't win anything. You know, you finished second, but we came such a long way last season. We went from a club going into game week one last season that many people predicted to be part of a top four challenge. Many people didn't see as much of a threat to a Manchester City, essentially leaving the season as the biggest threat to Man City and going into this season that we're in now as one of the biggest threats with Liverpool to Man City's dominance. So I'm going to give it a 7 out of 10. I lean towards an 8 because the team was so young, and for 30 games in the season we was by far the best side in the league, in my opinion. It's just the final 7-8 games really let us down, and injuries played a part, but you know, injuries play a part for most sides, so I don't really want to dwell on that too much. So 7 out of 10 for me.
All right. And we did try and help you out as well with the Man City thing by just giving them a couple of licks, you know what I'm saying, and beat them twice that season, but still it wasn't good enough, man, you know what I'm saying? So you have to realise that you do owe it to us, you know what I'm saying, especially when you kick off tomorrow at 5:30, okay. You know what I'm saying, which is all good. So look, coming on to this season now, okay, so this season, are you happy with your start to this season?
I am. I mean, we're 1 point off City, and if people are familiar with my fan cams on AFTV and my thoughts in general, I have been concerned at times this season with the lack of fluidity and the chemistry. We're not creating as many chances as we did last season, and we're not as exciting as we was last season. But in the last few weeks, I'm not a fan that's after good football. I'm a fan that's after Arsenal challenging. And however that may come, it may come. I know we was, you know, spoiled under Arsene Wenger with exciting, free-flowing football with great technical players. And if you ask me a way to win, that would be the way to win. But for me, if we can win a league title by controlling most games, being mature in most games, by nullifying the opposition in most games, I'll take it every single season. And I feel like that's what Arteta's development has been this season. I think we came close last season, but he's kind of tried to get a lot more control this season. And that's been, you know, at the risk of chances created. But we head into December, or at this international break now, 1 point off City. So I'm not here complaining. I had concerns, but like I said, come game week 38, if we're top of the pile and we've controlled the most, you know, controlled games throughout the season and it hasn't been the most exciting, I'll take it.
And what's your best game so far this season?
So far this season, PSV stands out to me, the 4-0 win in the Champions League. If we're talking Premier League, then it's a more difficult one, but Man City, because we really needed that win against Man City. It wasn't the most beautiful of games.
What's the score?
1-0. It wasn't a you know, a great goal. It was a deflected goal from Martinelli coming up to the 90th minute. But we needed to get over that mental block that we had against Man City. Over the last couple of years, Arteta's managed to, you know, win games away from home against big six sides consistently, win games at home against big six sides. It's just Anfield and Etihad that are the kind of the last two ticks that need to be checked off come the end of the season. But we struggled against Man City at the Emirates year in, year out too. So that win, for me, has to be the one this season.
And the worst?
The worst... Listen, we lost against Newcastle, but that 2-2 to Tottenham, even though Tottenham are having a great start to the season, we usually beat them at the Emirates. We beat them home and away last season, and it just felt like... Yeah, Tottenham do look good this season. And I thought we might have been the game to stop that momentum they had. But, you know, they deserved their point. So that was probably the worst one for me this season.
Arsenal, I mean, you talked about Arsenal and this season, how they're growing and they matured. This squad, I mean, are you happy with the squad? Is there anybody that you're happy, excited about? And anyone that you think should do better?
I'm very excited about Rice. I mean, I knew Rice was a good player at West Ham. I'm seeing a great player here at Arsenal. Not to say he wasn't great at West Ham. I didn't watch West Ham week in, week out. He picked up a European trophy for them. But I'm most excited about Rice because he looks like a key component in a... Not just a title winning side, but he looks like he can be a key component in a league dominating side. He looks like he's got all the attributes that you'd liken to great midfielders in the past in great teams that have won multiple titles or challenged on the European stage. So I'm most excited about Rice, most disappointed about another summer signing, and that's Kai Havertz, because I'm yet to see anything. It's literally the opposite of everything I'm seeing in Rice. I expected Havertz to come in, and listen, I know he's had a tough time at Chelsea over the years, and I know there was a player there at Leverkusen, quality player at that. I even see clips till today and wonder where that player has gone. So I trust Arteta that you want him. It's a big move, 65 million. I expect to see something on the ball, and everything I've seen from Havertz has come off the ball, whether it be tackling, his physicality or his aerial winning ability. I just haven't seen enough, so I'm most disappointed with that player so far.
Arteta, we talked about him as a manager as well. I mean, you were a little bit shaky about him, you know, in the early days, in the early Brentford 2-0 at the New Griffin Park days, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. But obviously time has moved on. Your thoughts on Arteta and how he's been doing for Arsenal?
I mean, Arteta has done a great job, in my opinion, to bring us to the top table. I was on a panel show the other day, and a lot of the panel were fans of opposition clubs, and they, you know, labelled Arteta's greatest achievement as the FA Cup. For me, it's not. His greatest achievement is bringing Arsenal back to where we are now, which is a team that can challenge at the top. Along the way, he had to reconnect the club to the fans. He had to shift out a hell of a lot of players and a hell of a lot of money. He had to bring in a hell of a lot of players, and he had to then implement his own philosophy. And for a manager that wasn't a manager before Arsenal Football Club, at times I did have doubts. At times I thought to myself, is this the guy to do it? He hasn't got the experience. And in football, experience goes a long way, not only on the pitch, but off the pitch too, in a managerial position. So I had many doubts over the years, but slowly but surely, though, those doubts have been knocked out of the park. Whether it be a top four challenge the season before last, or whether it be a title challenge last season, you can see the progress that's been made. We're at a time now where all that progress has been great. It's time to, you know, try and get over the line in one of these majors now. And by majors, I mean Premier League, Champions League, FA Cup, and start bringing in some titles now, because I feel like Arteta deserves it. I feel like Arsenal deserve it, the way we've gone about it with the young side, the football we've been playing, and generally the pressure that's been on the young team's shoulders. They've managed to, you know, swat away any doubts and really kick on year. So it's a big year or two for Mikel now.
Yeah, so we've got a game on Saturday. Like I said, your big game, New Griffin Park, 5:30 kickoff. You're playing Brentford, who have caused you problems in the past. You know what I'm saying? We got that win. We also got that draw, which I know a lot of Arsenal fans keep on going on about. They keep on going about the goal and the lines and Ivan Toney and this, that. They forget to mention about Brian Mbeumo scoring a goal that should have been allowed, but it wasn't allowed. But anyway, but as Brentford fans, we don't really go on about things like that. We just move on with our lives, you know what I'm saying? However, like I said to you, it caused you a few problems. So Brentford, you know, just talk to me about Brentford and is any concerns you have about our team and players?
I've definitely got concerns against Brentford. It wasn't that long ago we started the season in that fashion against you. But look, you haven't got Ivan Toney, but you've shown that you can compete without Ivan Toney. You've got big wins this season, and you're mid-table at the moment, and I expect you to kick on for the rest of the season. You're that team. You mentioned it on the box-to-box we've done on AFTV. You can be a disruptor to the big six, to the title chasing sides. So Brentford, I always look at it as a difficult game. I always, you know, I never look past a Brentford game, whether that's at the Emirates or away here at New Griffin Park. I'm expecting a tough game. Mbomo's one for me that, even before Tony's absence, Mbomo for me was underrated. His performances used to go quite under the radar because there was other stars in the team. I think now that, you know, Tony's got taken a back seat for the next, you know, until January, Mbomo's really kicked on, and he takes penalties now as well. He's in my fantasy team. Rico Henry's another one. Unfortunate now that he's out. I thought that he's on the way to a England call-up and a potential chance for Euro 2024, considering the problems that England have in the fullback position, that fullback position in particular. But he's out of the game. I just wanted to give him a mention because he had a great start to the season, and I do think he'll kick on when he comes back. Mbomo's the one. Wisa against us in the Carabao Cup really should have scored, in my opinion, but he was always in a position to score. So that's something we're going to have to look out for, because as much as we rotated in the Carabao Cup, we had a strong team there too. So to allow Brentford the chances we did, it was concerning. I think, you know, we won that game and it was a great away win, but Brentford should have got a goal. Similar to, you know, your last match out against Liverpool. Listen, Liverpool are ruthless in front of goal, but I just don't know how Brentford didn't get a goal or two back.
So we're saving it for Saturday, then.
Hopefully not. Hopefully not. Listen, if that happens, then Billy, yeah, we might be in for a long night as Arsenal fans. But definitely, there's concern there playing Brentford anytime. Look, how many teams in the Premier League can say they beat City at the Etihad? Not many. I can only think of Brentford and Tottenham off the top of my head.
Crystal Palace.
Actually, did Tottenham beat them at the Etihad? They didn't last season, but maybe the year before. I don't know. But Brentford and Palace, let's stick on those two. So that shows in itself that you can be, you know, you are a difficult team to go up against.
So listen, I mean, I would say the game on Saturday, how's it going to pan out then?
Arsenal going to win. How it pans out and how that result comes about, I'm not too sure. I'm expecting a tough game. I expect both teams to score, but I think Arsenal should and will have the quality to get the win at the end, especially when we look at Man City, Liverpool facing each other. It's predicted that the league title will be decided between City, Liverpool and Arsenal. So if I'm an Arsenal player and I'm looking at our two closest rivals playing each other, this is a chance to capitalise. You don't get many of these chances this season. You get two. Man City play Liverpool twice, and this is one of the ones we have to take. So I think we should get the job done and use that knowledge that Man City and Liverpool will either both drop points or one will drop points and you know, do what we need to do on the pitch.
Okay, so I like that. I think we should get the job done, which means you're not 100% confident, which is good. So give us a score prediction.
2-1 Arsenal.
2-1 Arsenal Turkish. I'll be giving my score prediction a little bit later on the podcast with the rest of the crew. But listen, Turkish has been great. Like I said to you, I've been on the AFTV as well. If you want to check out AFTV, box to box. Yep. Box to box is my, what's it, third, fourth? It must be about fifth, box to box. Oh,
you're,
my God.
I'm telling you. Listen, Billy's a legend on box to box, people. So if you enjoy Billy's content here, then just search up Brentford Arsenal box to box. Use the number 2 for the 2. And you'll see at least 4 videos of me and Billy talking. And it's not just those games we're talking about. Billy's got a vast depth of knowledge, and you know, he's a wise guy beyond his years. So talking to Billy every time, I learn stuff, and the comment section learns stuff too. So if you're after content, if you're craving some more Billy the Bee, search Box to Box Brentford Arsenal.
Which is all good. Like I said to you, the first one was shot actually in the stadium before any fans had been there even. So it was fresh, and we sat in there for an hour and just chatted away. And it was a really good chat as well, actually. I really, really enjoyed it. So it's all good. You know, typical, different type of vibe, because it's like talking about football, just chatting football and old school football and new school football, and none of this jock shock, shock jock business. You know what I'm saying? It's much more football chat, which I know Lochar Besotted listeners like listening to as well. So I'd say as well, and that's why I come on to your podcast, because I do enjoy chatting football with you, like I said to you. It's on AFTV, Box to Box. Go and check it out. But anyway, like I said to you, Turkish, it's been absolutely brilliant chatting to you today. We'll chat after the game, no doubt.
100%.
Hopefully I'll be chatting with a big beaming smile on my face.
I might not answer.
Yeah, that's right. That's what normally happens. And then I'll catch up with you later in the season.
Listen, thank you very much, Billy. And listen, big up all the Brentford fans, man. One of the nicest fan bases that I've come across, not only this season, but I've been going football for 25 years now. One of the nicest set of fans I've met. Great new stadium, but still have kept that community vibe. A lot of clubs build a new stadium and they got lost in the commercial corporate sauce. Brentford have a brilliant stadium, but that community feel is still very much here.
Yes, Turkish. I'll catch up soon.
Nice one, Billy. Take care.
There you go, Turkish from AFTV, quite confident that the Arsenal are going to get a result against the Bees. Knows it's going to be a bit of a sticky wicket for them, but again, you know, he's looking at greater heights. You know, I think he was knocked, as you could hear, he was knocked the wind out of him when we beat them 2-0 that time, and I think they've just realised that they can't rest on their laurels anymore when it comes to the Bees. But you know, listen, they've got a great side. I mean, they've gone through the players that they've got in their side, and it's mind-blowing what they've got. So in principle, if they put that together, I think they should, in principle, I'm not saying I should think, in principle they should do the business. But as I said to him, I think I said it to him on AFTV, I think Thomas Frank prefers to play against Arteta than he does to play against Dyche, because as I've explained in the podcast a few weeks ago, when I met Dyche a few weeks ago, and I told him the JB fact, we've played them 7 times and Dyche has beaten us 6 times as a manager at Brentford. We've only beaten him once and we kind of haven't got the best of him. However, I think Frank likes to play against teams like the Arteta type teams, because this takes his tactical nous to a next level. And that is the thing that I think that we may have in our bow, which may keep us within this game. What do you reckon, Laney?
Yeah, I think in our armoury, there's a lot to hurt Arsenal and a lot to worry them. Arteta will know that. He's most saltiest against us, and I think there's a sprinkling of salt to shake all over him on Saturday. I think we just have to make sure that we go at them. And we want to attack, because a couple of games I've seen recently where Arsenal just haven't, they've been well within their comfort zone, because the away team or the home team haven't really been confident enough to go on the front foot. I don't think we're going to see that. You know, it's going to be a performance that is going to be a setup, a selection, and a mentality and tactics that are going to be set up for us to go and beat them. I don't think Thomas Frank and the team have got "we'll take a point now" mentality about their approach to this match. And I think, you know, as I said a couple of times already, I think we're shaping up for what could be a really big Saturday night, mate.
Let's keep your fingers crossed. Like I said to you, listen, you know, as we do beforehand, afterhand, we almost like prepare the beforehand party, the afterhand party, just in case it doesn't go right.
Well, I'm not planning party mode, but I think if it's a sunny day, if the sun's out, I think we ought to have a pre kind of couple by the river.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, not necessarily the walk, but just like a couple of strain on the greenies and then like head to the Globe, which I still say the Globe's just the best match day pub there is in Brentford, mate. So, like, you know, if you want to come down and join us before the game out in the beer garden and have a chat about Brentford, you're always all welcome. And afterwards as well, it's certainly not a clique down there. So, yeah, get yourself down the Globe, have a pint, come and have a chat with us.
Home and away fans as well. You know, if you've got the manners, as we say, as away fans, listen, I mean, Brentford, you can go anywhere, any pub, as long as you've got the manners, you come there, have a drink, have a chat, and just do the manners, as we say. Just coming back to Arsenal as a team, just looking at their strengths and weaknesses, Lainey, attacking set pieces, very strong. Creating long shot opportunities, very strong. Defending set pieces, very strong. Attacking down the wing, strong. Finishing, scoring chances, strong. Stealing the ball from the opposition, strong. And they're weak at defending counter-attacks. So it looks like counter-attacks is going to be then, isn't it, Lady?
Yep, that suits us. You know, it'd be two counter-attacking teams probably. You know, it really is going to be like a fascinating tactical exercise on Saturday. You know, they've got Declan Rice there now. You know, although our record against Declan Rice teams is all right. You know, we've beaten West Ham every time we played them, and he was, apart from this season, he was involved in all of them. So, you know, of course you're wary, but I don't think we fear anyone.
No, okay, so things, I've got to change up a little bit as well. They're going to have to change up a little bit because Nathan Collins, our defender, centre-back, he got injured over in playing for Ireland as well in the Euro qualifiers, which is a little bit frustrating. We were very worried because ligament damage, as they called it, we thought that it looks like he's going to be out for months, could be out for to the end of the season. When's it going to be? And then somebody posted up that they saw somewhere on the internet that he might only be out for a couple of weeks. So maybe the ligament damage isn't as bad as it is. But the fact is, he's going to be out for this match, and he's been really good for Brentford, hasn't he?
Yeah, he has. I think he had a couple of games where his form dipped, but he's certainly been very strong in the last few games, for sure. But it's great that we've got me back now, so you know, at least there is some cover there. There's obviously Zanka, which is always, he's the permanently overlooked player in our squad, the one that we forget we've even got until you think, oh yeah, Zanka plug that gap, and he's never really let us down at all ever. So you know, I think there are options, and you know, it's not great, but it's not like it was, you know, a couple of months ago when me was out of the picture, where you'd be worrying, you know, how we were going to plug that gap. So yeah, so get fit soon, but yeah, we'd be all right, I think.
Yeah, and again, but obviously, you know, with teams like Arsenal, you haven't heard that for a while. The teams like Arsenal, we normally go sort of 3-5 at the back. So, you know, so we go with the 3 centre backs. So, and obviously with Collins being out, this is the question. Is it a case that, you know, does Zanka come in? So we go 3 at the back. Or is it a case that we go, you know, 4 at the back like we do in other matches? And again, this is the big question with Thomas Frank. I mean, is he a person that just sticks to his guns to say this is where we're going to go, and he drills it in with the players and makes them play that way? So he'll bring Zanka in, and Zanka actually will be playing in that position, or will we actually flip the script? I mean, we don't know, do we?
No, I mean, I guess there's obviously always an option now of playing Yenel on the left back, and do we remix the midfield so Yarmolenko gets a start? Is that the kind of, is that his chance? I don't know if we can, you know, remix the midfield and incorporate, you know, Thomas Frank has got options and he's got some exciting ones. It's whether he goes kind of slightly experimental, or he kind of just, you know, makes one change and keeps things as consistent as he can, because, you know, the game up at Anfield showed, you know, we can mix it with the best and still create. So I don't think he'll bring too many changes, but you know, I'm kind of shooting the breeze there.
Yeah, again, shooting the breeze. And like I said, Yarmolenko is the big question mark as well. Will he come into the side after
performing as he did on Sunday against Liverpool, or again, do you bring him off the bench to form a bit of an impact situation as well? I mean, his control of the ball has been fantastic. You know, is this something that we need? You know, do you play Arsenal's, you know, do you play Arsenal's game against them? Do we go toe-to-toe with Arsenal? I mean, the way that we normally play, we actually don't go toe-to-toe with teams. You know, if a team is great at possession football, you know, and playing that, you know, we don't actually normally go toe-to-toe with them. We normally play a different game. We go long, we use our strengths, you know. So is it the same against Arsenal? We've worked out what their weaknesses are. So the personnel that we put out there will reflect that, I'd say, to a certain extent. But I'm actually really excited to see Yarmolenko coming on. He will feature at some stage in that game. Whether or not he'll start or not is going to be a bit of a question mark. So, I mean, listen, Arsenal at the weekend, like I said to you, I'm looking forward to a great day out. I've got a cup match with my Barnet Panthers girls in the morning. So I've got an early start. I'm on a football pitch from 9 o'clock in the morning, play at AFC Wimbledon. So we'll see how that goes. Fingers crossed, if we get a result there, then I'm literally, when the final whistle goes, I'm legging it down to Strand on the Green, and I'm going to be joining you, Laney, and whoever else wants to come out and have some beers with us down on the by the river for a few hours before heading down to the Globe. And that, for me, is the pre-match. And hopefully that will set up the Arsenal game nicely, just like we set up the Arsenal game, the first game of the season. First day of the season 2 years ago, where we had a nice good pre-match, and then by the time we got inside the stadium, the place was absolutely rocking.
Absolutely, yeah. I've said it a couple of times. I'm really looking forward to Saturday evening, mate. Are we going to do predictions?
Well, that's what I'm saying. I'm just opening it up to you, Laney. What are you saying?
I'm going 2-1 Brentford win, mate.
Oh, that's funny, because I went on the AFTV and I'm pretty sure that I said, was it a 2-1 Brentford win or a 1-0 Brentford win? I should have to go back on that. But I've gone for a win as well. I think I'm going to go for a 1-0 on this podcast, because I don't want to duplicate what you said. But I've actually gone for a win for the Bees as well. Just because I think it's just one of those ones where we've got absolutely nothing to lose.
Nothing at all. We haven't talked about the Everton points deduction. So that's plunged them into relegation mire again. So, you know, we're almost certainly not looking over our shoulders at any time soon. So, you know, the winning away at Chelsea, and you know, that result in particular meant that we have got a free hit, and you know, we can afford to attack these teams, and that's what I'm expecting, mate.
That's right. So listen, this is the Besotted Pride of West London podcast. Don't forget to buy us a beer, besotted.com/beer. Thank you to everyone who's bought us a beer so far, and we'll have a few of them in the pub before and after the game on Saturday against Arsenal as well. Don't forget to subscribe on all good podcast channels, and also write us a review in those podcast channel places, like Spotify, and you know, I don't think you do Spotify, but you know, and iTunes and all these other places as well, which is all good. And like I said to you, don't forget, we'll have podcasts next Thursday again, Pride of West London. Also after the game, we're going to be going sticking microphones under people's noses and giving you a listen, post-match reaction straight after the match. Bees fans and also Arsenal fans as well will be letting us know exactly what they think of that match. But like I said to you, I've enjoyed having a little chin wag with you after a week off, Laney, which has been all good.
Yeah, good podcast, mate. Well done. Thank you.
Congratulations to yourself as well. So my name's Billy Grant, like I said to you, and we've got Laney in the house.
Good afternoon.
This is all good. Good afternoon. So we'll catch up with you. We've got an Arsenal Saturday. We've got down by the river. We're going to have a drink. What else do we say?
Come on, you bees.
Come on, you bees. Let's beat the arse. It's actually a student. You bees.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.